Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Marriages often end in divorce. About 50% of them do, which can be ugly. Drawn-out contests over children and assets, but they don't have to be. More couples are choosing to part ways outside the courtroom using strategies such as collaborative divorce. Joining us now in the studio is collaborative divorce attorney Nancy Sponseller. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you.
And Randy Cohen, a mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral. We'll talk about that title in a few minutes. Welcome, Randy.
Thank you.
And online is certified divorce financial analyst Susan Moosey. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
What distinguishes, Nancy Sponseller, a collaborative divorce from an arbitration divorce or a mediation process or something like that?
Well, it's very distinct. In mediation, generally the parties go to one mediator and sit down with the mediator who may or may not be an attorney. They do not have their attorneys present. There is no financial neutral generally involved in that mediation process. But they sit down with a mediator and they try to come up with a resolution through the mediator's assistance. My own mediation training, and I've had extensive mediation training, thinking at one time I would become a mediator. The mediation model is one, at least as I was taught it, was one where you were not to lead the parties to any particular solution or give them information, but let the parties speak to each other and have each other react to the other party's suggestion for resolution. And it was not a process where I felt the parties were able to have as much information as I know they should have as a professional in this process. But it is a process that works for some people where the issues are simple and where there is low conflict between the couple. That is the best chance of success, in my opinion, for mediation. They still, in mediation, the parties do have the right and are often urged to seek their own legal counsel as issues are discussed in mediation. In arbitration, the parties can select by agreement an arbitrator who will essentially sit as a private judge. It will be very much akin to a litigated case, except it's in a private setting, and you're selecting someone who is not an elected judicial official to resolve the matter.
And do you have to abide by how they resolve it?
Well, yes. Usually the parties would agree in advance that it will be binding. What the rules of arbitration would be, whether they would be pursuant to the rules set forth by the American Arbitration Association or modified by agreement. I mean, that's a part of the process of selecting arbitration. What are the rules of engagement?
Okay.
Would there be a right of appeal? There was a time in Ohio where child-related issues could not be arbitrated. I believe that's been resolved by the court so that parties can agree in the future that their disputes for child-related issues would be subject to arbitration. So essentially, they can't arbitrate. I am not aware that arbitration is being done in the central Ohio area. I'm not aware where it's being done elsewhere in the country to resolve family disputes, but it certainly is an option. And before a party signs for a collaborative case, we make sure that the parties are aware of all their options, litigation being one, mediation, arbitration, early neutral evaluation. There is an attorney in town who does early neutral evaluation. And to negotiate a dissolution without the collaborative process. So those are the choices that the public has when they are needing legal services to resolve family disputes, principally the termination of a marriage, but it could be other issues as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about collaborative divorce today. You just heard from Nancy Sponseller. She's a collaborative divorce attorney, also with us in the studio. Randy Cohen, she's a mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral. And Susan Moosey's on the phone. She's a certified divorce financial analyst. And Susan Moosey, you're also neutral in this. What does the financial analyst figure, or how does the financial analyst figure into the equation?
Sure. You know, I think there's perhaps
the more obvious role of the financial professional as being the one who is going to work with the couple in gathering the financial information that is going to be necessary for the filing and for the decision-making. The financial neutral's role will be to work with the two clients together to put together a schedule of their assets and liabilities, and to also to understand the earnings of the party or the cash flow issues. The second part of the financial neutral's role, then, is also to be a source of education for both the parties, the clients, and the professional team. Many times, couples come to us and, you know, we in relationships perhaps, you know, divide to conquer, and therefore one of the parties is usually not as up to speed, if you will, with the financial picture of their particular financial matter and may have had less of a responsibility as far as tax filing. So my job, or a financial professional's job, is to educate both parties to hopefully get them at a level at which they're both making informed decisions.
Is this about things like what your rights are to Social Security benefits down the road, that sorts of thing, retirement pension benefits, that kind of thing?
Yes, we do cover those areas that are appropriate for each case. You know, these parties come to us. I mean, while there are certain things that are common among clients that are going through a termination of their marriage, they all come to us with different facts. And so we will talk about if they've been married for 10 years or more, you know, what Social Security may look like for both of them, the impact to both of them under certain circumstances. We also will talk about their retirement plans, how they work, how they can be accessed, how they can be divided, and what the tax consequences of doing so, and how to avoid any tax consequences if need be.
How does the issue of children play into it?
From the financial expert's viewpoint, it's going to be mainly about how are we going to cover the cost of raising the children. Clients come to us with already a notion and an understanding that there's something out there called a guideline child support order that provides a number as to what people with a certain amount of earnings would be paying in child support. But the financial neutral is going to kind of go one step beyond that and kind of ask the question, let's figure out what the expenses are of raising the children in two separate households, and how are we going to cover those expenses.
And do you also ask the question, what do you want to do for your child?
Certainly. Interests and goals are a big component of the collaborative process. We oftentimes use the story, and I'll keep it very short, to illustrate our point about what interests and goals are by talking about the orange, and how if there's one orange and there are two people who are going to share this orange, and we're looking about what would be a division of that orange, one might just take a knife and slice it down the middle and present each with half, but you may not have satisfied clients at the end because perhaps one was really only interested in the pulp to make juice, and the other one may have been interested only in the rind in order to make, you know, potpourri or something,
zest.
Or zest. So we use that very simple illustration because we want to point out and to learn from the clients what's important to you in the end for your futures, because we're not necessarily always going to be competing for the same resources for the same reasons. And how can we meet your goals in other ways?
Randy Cohen, you're a mental health counselor. That's what you've been doing for most of your career, mm-hmm. Much of your career, I should say. And now you're a collaborative divorce neutral. And I know that this is a big part of your career now.
Yep.
So it's a growing field.
It absolutely is. And it's growing in Central Ohio. It's growing more. I think attorneys are starting to understand that They do really good job with helping clients understand the law and all the legal aspects of it. There's still all the emotion to deal with, and they haven't been trained, and it gets, quite frankly, quite expensive for an attorney to try to deal with the emotions of a divorcing couple. And not just the money, but also they haven't been trained to do that. So now when I'm brought in on a team, it would be two attorneys, the financial neutral, and me, the mental health neutral. I help not just the clients cope, because it's very different from therapy, because I don't go deep. The whole point is to help them be able to talk better at the table and to be able to talk when no one else is around, because especially if they have children, they're connected for the rest of their children's lives and they're going to have to talk. And so what I do as a neutral is I help the couple, and I also like to think that I help the team, because things come up all the time that we don't plan on just within the team. If there are different belief systems or somebody says something that another person says, wow, I don't get what happened there. The team is a really strong professional support for each other. And I get to kind of, I like to think I'm the glue that keeps the team talking too.
You know, Nancy Sponseller, I imagine you were a divorce attorney before you became a collaborative divorce attorney. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what it's like for you to work with people from such different, you know, roles in a divorce proceeding.
It's exciting. I'm embracing the interdisciplinary team model that Collaborative has. And it's probably because it's the main reason that I'm staying as a practitioner in family law, because the financial neutral and the mental health neutral add so much to the quality of the product, the end resolution that the parties achieve in the collaborative process. And I see that. And I see how working as a team, we deliver a better way to go through a divorce.
And I wanted to ask you this before we let Susan Moosey go, because she's going to be leaving in a second. Do you make as much money as a divorce attorney?
Well, I'm busy all the time.
Okay.
Okay. So cases come in.
Quantity versus.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I may not be working on one huge case for 3 months, billing just that case or a couple of cases. So there are more cases. Before Susan leaves, I would like to make a point so she can address this, because mm-hmm. it's really key to this process when we start. We want complete financial disclosure. We want complete transparency. And Susan, or the financial neutral, is the key person right out of the gate who works with the parties. Before we get to goals and interests about the children and what costs for the children are need to be met and how will they be met in separate households, Susan, or the financial neutral in that role, is the key person who works directly with the parties to obtain the information, their financial information and documentation that is key, that she then presents and lays out so we all know what we have to work with. And I'd like Susan to address that, because I think she knows that is the first step, and that's her role.
And in Susan Moosey, that's pretty personal stuff. It's probably not easy for people to disclose, and you also know what rocks to look under, right?
Yeah, well, we have some tricks, if you will, to try to understand, do we have a complete and accurate picture? You know, the clients are agreeing in this process to be forthright and voluntarily disclose all information. And it's not that we don't trust them, we think that they're hiding, but you don't know what you don't know. So I will ask, for example, pension plans seem to be an area where a lot of employees don't even realize a lot of times that they even have one. So you ask the questions. Do you, you know, I see you work for this company. In my experience, they have a retirement plan. Do you, you know, can we get some information? So you ask a lot of questions. You rely in some respects to your experiences. And we do expect our financial neutrals to come into this process with the experience of financial planning and working with divorcing couples, so that we're pretty familiar with, you know, most common things. So the the whole point of the collaborative process is this efficiency. So I, as a neutral, am going to sit down with the couple together, and one person, most often, and maybe there would be reasons not to do it this way, but the most efficient way to do this is for the financial neutral to sit down with the party to gather the information, to document, and then provide all that information to the other professionals in a very organized manner. That way, under a different way of doing this would be each attorney's office would be compiling that information. Mm. So you've got twice the effort going on to try to produce the same amount or to produce the same output. And, what if there are conflicting balance sheets because one of the parties remembered they had this but the other one didn't? Then it becomes a question of, now we have to sit down with these two balance sheets and figure out which one's right. So at least the financial neutral's role is one of providing the clients with a more efficient process in which they're only working with the one neutral.
Well, Susan Moosey, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. I'm so glad we had this opportunity.
Susan Moosey, she's a certified divorce financial analyst, and she works in what is called collaborative divorce cases. Still with us, Nancy Sponseller. She's a collaborative divorce attorney, and Randy Cohen, a mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Recent research suggests that the baby boom generation was responsible for the rise in divorce after 1970. And now that they are middle-aged or older, their pattern of high marital instability continues. That is, divorce remains common. But how divorce is achieved is more nuanced these days. Today we're talking about collaborative divorce. It's an option intended to help both sides avoid the strife and expense of the traditional contested style of divorce. Still with us in the studio is collaborative divorce attorney Nancy Sponseller. Nancy, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And a mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral, Randy Cohen. Randy, thanks again.
Thanks.
Randy, you're kind of new to this.
Mm-hmm.
But Susan Sponseller, as we mentioned earlier, you're a divorce attorney, kind of the traditional before you got mm-hmm. into this end of it. And I was kind of wondering, we talk about how it eases the stress and blah, 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 blah for the two people getting a divorce, but it's made your job a little bit more.
Well, it's much more positive for me.
Yeah.
There's different stress involved in what I do now professionally. I think the greatest stress is that just the desire professionally to get the folks to the finish line and with a positive settlement that will be fair, equitable, that both parties can see as fair and equitable, and to get through the rough times. These are not easy cases. They're not easier in collaborative than they were in litigation. It's just that we take them down an entirely different path. And so in these joint meetings that we have, this process involves joint meetings that are scheduled where there's an agenda, where we know what we're going to be discussing. Usually about meeting number two or three, we have some difficult conversations that need to take place.
Like, for instance?
Well, on the question of support, it's always difficult because one party, if this is a long-term marriage, let's say, and there's a great disparity between the parties in their income earning abilities, there's going to be some support, child support, and if there are minor children, and certainly spousal support. There needs to be that conversation. And that's a difficult conversation to have because maybe one party has not worked outside the home or may feel that they're ill-equipped to go into the workplace, may feel that it's too late to be educated, or they have health issues. It's a difficult conversation. And what we try to do in collaborative is to create a safe place to have those conversations where each party can be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And we listen. And so I think the stress for me professionally is because I'm so passionate about wanting the best for the parties and their children, that I stress over, you know, the bumps in the road, too. And how can we do it better? How can something be approached in a different way that will be the linchpin, if you will, that will move the parties forward, maybe out of impasse?
Now, there are two attorneys, and
yes,
they're both collaborative attorneys.
Yes.
They both have to be collaborative, but there's only one you, Randy.
There is only one me. I mean, whether
there's
it's...
others like you out there, I assume. But
yes, there are. And the more we do, the more experience we get. It's new to me in terms of I've been doing this the past several years and really only picked up about a year and a half ago with having lots of cases, mm-hmm, which I, like Nancy, have been really passionate about.
What have you observed about the people who choose the collaborative route?
I thought what I would see is people who were kind of who could get along outside of this and have mutually decided to end their marriage. That's not who goes to the collaborative through the collaborative process. We have people who are very contentious, who one person wants the ending of the marriage, the other one clearly doesn't. Mm. One person has strayed in the marriage. One person has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars outside of the marriage. There's all kinds of things we see that used to surprise me. Now, mm-hmm, I've gained some insight into people are people.
So what is it that's driving them to a collaborative process?
I think part of it is that now people are learning about it. They're just starting to hear about it. We're doing a better job talking about the collaborative process. One of the things I say to the people that I, because I've worked professionally as a therapist, helping couples separate. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things when I talk about collaborative divorce is I say, if the two of you can walk away saying, you know what? This was okay. I'm okay with this. It's not going to be, yay, this, mm-hmm, was great for most people, because it's a huge loss. You know, they're ending years of companionship with the same person. They're creating two separate households. They're cutting their incomes in half. It's a big loss in lots of areas. But if they can walk away and say, you know, this was okay, that to me is very successful, rather than I hate you, I never want to see you again, and the only people who win are the attorneys, because it's been litigated and the attorneys have, you know, the clients have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars going through litigation.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about collaborative divorce this hour. Have you participated in a collaborative divorce as a couple splitting up, getting a divorce? Give us a call and share your story. Or are you considering it? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there, and we'll try to get to them. You mentioned, as opposed to spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases, Randy, Nancy Sponseller, what does a collaborative divorce tend to cost?
Well, it depends. It varies because the cases vary. There are people who come in with modest assets and income levels, and there are people who come into the process who have very complicated financials. And so it varies with what the needs are of the couple going through the process.
Is it kind of on a meeting-by-meeting basis?
It is.
Okay. So there's like, all right, we're going to have, mm-hmm, to meet 20 times.
Well, I've never had a case where we've had 20 meetings.
But okay, it'll be like that, so people can kind of anticipate, mm-hmm, what their costs are going to, mm-hmm, be.
And we tell them where we need to end up. We need to end up with a separation agreement that goes through their assets and their liabilities and allocates those and addresses spousal support. If there are minor children, we need to end up with usually a shared parenting plan that goes through all the child-related issues, the rights and obligations of each of the parents as it relates to the children and how they will co-parent. So how many meetings will it take to get to the final yes so the lawyers can draft the documents? You know, I just finished a collaborative case that I would say had a fair amount of issues, and I think we got through it in 5 meetings. Mm-hmm. I've had cases where we've had 8 or 9 meetings, and I've had cases where we've had 3 or 4 meetings. It is absolutely tailored to the needs of the parties, and they can see that as we set the agenda.
As you get into a collaborative divorce, do sometimes you find that some people just aren't going to be able to do it, Randy Cohen, where you're just like, you know what, you guys just can't cut it this way?
Yes. Well, first, what
it sounds
we
like
do,
a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
On their personal part.
And just to continue what Nancy was saying in terms of the cost, a lot of the way that we tell people to keep costs down is if they do their work so that we don't have to do that or keep meeting to remind them to do it.
Okay.
So that is one another way to keep costs down. We also have a process where I do an initial evaluation with each person separately to see if anything pops out that says, whoa, this probably is not going to be a good case. I have to say I have been fooled. I've had a couple of cases where, in hindsight, I don't know how I would have seen it or how we would have seen it, because it didn't happen until after somebody got challenged a little and then all of this other stuff came out. Mm-hmm. But we do try to screen couples to say, you know, this may not be the best process for you. Here are some other choices. Mm-hmm. But so can I just describe what a meeting looks like?
Yes.
Okay. So if we have our first meeting after we've had an initial meeting with me, I communicate with the attorneys and I say, I think this couple is a good candidate. So then we get together. Sometimes Susan Moosey or the financial person is there during that first meeting if she's gotten the information, and we can try to get a lot of stuff done. But initially, that first meeting is me and the two attorneys and the clients, and sometimes a financial neutral. And we walk through, they make sure that they understand the whole process and their choices of different choices to get to end their marriage. So we do all that initial making sure they really understand. And then we move into, we're sitting at a conference table. And so the couple is actually literally sitting at the table with each, they're there together because we want them to be able to talk to each other. And in the initial meeting, we do these goals and interests and say, initially, what do you want to have happen? Let's talk about this process. How would you like the process to be? And what do you think will happen? What would you like to see happen at the end of this process? Mm-hmm. So we do try to find out what they need, what they would like. We carry that as a banner at every meeting. I post that as a reminder that sometimes they have different interests and sometimes they have very similar interests. Mm-hmm. And that's just up there as a reminder for us, the whole team, to keep going back to.
Is there a lot of sadness?
There's some sadness at the table. There's more sadness away. I do a lot of my work, not just at the table, but I have phone conversations. Sometimes I meet with people in my office. They're trying to process the loss. I encourage them to get therapeutic support if they need to do that. And, you know, who can't use a little extra therapy? And I mean, maybe that's a bias of mine. I don't know.
But if I may add here, yes, there's sadness, but there's all sorts of emotions. The parties, who they are before they come in the door to these meetings, they're the same person in the meeting. And so we never know when something will erupt, if you will. I've had a case, and it was a case with Randy, where one party exploded emotionally. And in that same meeting, after Randy handled that privately, the other party imploded and had essentially a meltdown. And in the process of Randy helping each of the parties with those issues, they could hear each other and what was causing each other the most concern and pain. As lawyers, we were not equipped to handle that emotion, not at all. I think if a mental health person had not been involved in the case, and I see this again and again and again, by the way, the lawyers would just say, well, you know what, this isn't working. You know, we can't get you past that. But with the mental health neutral there, we get past that. And because they've heard each other and they've been able to express their pain, whatever it is, it might be there's anger. There's all sorts of human emotion. Who knows what's going on in the marriage? I mean, and the dynamics of the couple. They're in the room there. So but we get past that. And I think because they have a safe place where they can speak. Actually, I believe after the first meeting, they see that they have a safe place to come to where these conversations can occur. And they don't plan on erupting emotionally. I think it's spontaneous, you know, and they can't help it. And I know when I'm involved in that, I try, whether it's a man or a woman, I try to affirm and say, you know, please express yourself and take your time because it's important. If you feel that, we have time to wait and hear you. In other words, not to make them feel ashamed that they couldn't suck it up and be strong enough to sit there in a meeting, mm-hmm. Particularly with a strong-willed spouse, and just suck it up and not be emotional. And so, yes, there's all sorts of emotions that come out in these meetings.
And Randy, you said there's no particular demographic of a typical client. It's all over the place.
It is all over the place.
How are they finding out about collaborative divorce?
It's a good question. Well, some of them find out. They've been reading on the Internet. Mm-hmm. They've gone and talked with attorneys. Sometimes a couple of cases that are that we're involved in right now have one of the spouses came and said, I want to end the marriage and I want to do it in a collaborative way. And the other spouse said, I never even heard of that. So they go and they educate themselves. One of the things that I really am impressed with is how people are educating themselves, learning about collaborative divorce once they've heard about it as a viable option to end their marriage.
We're talking about collaborative divorce this hour. My guests are Nancy Sponseller. She's a collaborative divorce attorney. It requires special training. Randy Cohen is a mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral. If you have a question or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The contested divorce can be stressful and expensive. One of the alternatives to that is the collaborative divorce, in which the attorneys from both sides actually work together. They're trained to do that. Still with us in the studio is collaborative divorce attorney Nancy Sponseller and Randy Cohen. She's a mental health counselor and a collaborative divorce neutral. She's also trained to do her job in the collaborative divorce process. Joining us now by phone is Janine Bolin. She recently went through a collaborative divorce. Welcome to the show, Janine.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Why did you choose a collaborative divorce in the first place?
Because I still loved my husband. And I did not see him as an enemy.
Were you the one seeking the divorce?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And what were the factors that you thought made it a good candidate for collaboration?
The factors that attracted me was when I first started reaching out, I was looking at mediation and other alternatives, and I saw that there wasn't any really legal advice that would be given, and I didn't know if some of the things I may agree to would not have my best interest at heart. Even though I did not see my husband as an enemy, he was moving into kind of a protective mode because after a 30-year relationship, you know, this was not something I entered into lightly. Mm-hmm. But after a 30-year relationship, you know, emotions are going to erupt, and you know, he didn't understand, and he didn't understand why I wanted it, and I didn't seem to be able to communicate why things were happening the way they were. So in an effort to have some very good, detail-oriented, line item by line item sort of structure that was going to be necessary as we move forward, because we had spent a lifetime together and we had had four children. And I was still very much wanting him to be engaged as a very good father figure that he is. And in order to do that, I had to have people that were in place that had the training to walk my husband through what was necessary for this, as well as educate me, because frankly, my husband and I had never been divorced before. We didn't know, you know, we'd seen friends go through it, and we had seen the trauma to the family and to the children, and I did not want that, and neither did my husband. So we both agreed that the collaborative process would probably be in our best interest for all six of us.
So from where you sat, what was it like?
From where I sat, it was being able to have people help me communicate what I was trying to say in a way that my husband could understand, because of the emotional nature of a relationship breaking up. There's a lot of filters that go into play. So even though I may have been saying X, due to the nature of the emotional content, you know, my husband was going to hear Y, and it didn't matter how I said X or how I tried to change, it was going to be, and it was vice versa. I'm sure he had his own perspective of, he would try to communicate something to me, and I just wasn't able to hear it appropriately. So I feel that there was communication issues from both sides, and like I said, I did not, and I still don't, see my husband as the enemy. I just saw that the marriage was no longer good for how I had to move forward with my own life. And here I am at 50 in a relationship for 30 years and realizing, wow, I'm having to move in a very different direction. So that collaborative law was very helpful in that process when you're wanting to do it in as gentle a way as you can, despite the highly traumatic nature of the event.
Nancy Sponseller, is it usually one party that sort of drives them to a collaborative divorce, like Janine Boland just described?
I think so. There's, of course, the examples where both couples find the collaborative on the internet and embrace that, but usually it's one party who finds information. And I may say, people call my office, they call other attorneys' offices, and they say, I need a divorce. Well, that's like asking or saying, can I have a Kleenex? They don't mean a Kleenex brand, they mean a tissue. And so when a call comes in that I need a divorce, you can't just say, oh, well, this is going to be contested. You need to understand what they need and what their circumstances are, and what might be something that they would want to consider on the alternative processes that they have. What would be best for them and their family? So sometimes when I meet with a client who decides a collaborative process would be best for him or her, the spouse is unaware, maybe even unaware that the marriage there's been a decision to end the marriage. And so oftentimes we will communicate, if the spouse is not represented by an attorney, we send a letter and inviting them to look at the winwindivorce.org site to explain there is a collaborative process and that would be what would be best, if they can see whether it would work for them to at least investigate and talk with a collaborative attorney. So sometimes that letter then prompts the spouse's client, the client's spouse, to have a consultation with another collaborative attorney. And sometimes the couple just talk and they get on the internet and the other party looks at the information available and they get into an office of a collaborative attorney.
Janine Boland, were there any surprises for you about the process as you went through it?
The collaborative law process was wonderful for me. And no, I did not ever feel like I was surprised by the process. Mm-hmm. I feel it was based on so many other friends of mine who have gone through a divorce. The collaborative law process for me, for my family, was as structured and as calm as can be relative to all of the rather horrifying examples I had around me.
How did you find it personally of most value?
To me, it was the most value because of the total and complete breakdown in communication between my husband and myself. And what was the most value was then my husband then had a support network of not only his attorney, but also my attorney. My attorney was very kind to my husband, treated him with respect, treated him in a kindly way as I wished him to be treated. And then the having the CPA and the mental health professional, when my husband would have breakdowns or have to deal with emotional situations that would pop up at the table, they were there for them, as they were for me. When he would state something, and it would be like an emotional landmine. I didn't even know it was there. You know, I'm a very analytical person, and then all of a sudden I was having an emotional response, and I realized this was 20 years of hurt that had been built up, and I didn't even know it was there. And so they were there to kind of diffuse it, get it identified so that we could move forward and you wouldn't get stalled. And that's the thing I really enjoyed, was the fact that it didn't stall at any time. It continually made progress. It was good.
You know, Randy Cohen, as a mental health counselor, this you know, people talk about it as a landmine and all these kind of pejorative things, but it has to be very enriching, too.
I find it very exciting. I don't mean people's pain is exciting.
Right.
But I find that when I, in a situation like Janine is describing, when I watch something happen and then they can come back to the table and continue to talk, it's like, oh, yes, this is great. Because they're going to have to keep doing that. One of the things that when there's a magic that happens at the table, I've been on cases where I couldn't tell if I didn't know, I couldn't tell whose attorney was whose because of the supportive nature. There's in a really good collaborative case, the litigator goes away completely, and the team really looks at the system, the family system, what is in the best interest of the system. And in a case that I sat on, that I was participating in, I saw one of the attorneys look at her client, who was a high earner, and said, you know, your spouse has created a very meager budget and still can't make it. What do you think that you could do for this? What do you think you could do? And I'm going, wait, this is the attorney encouraging her own client to step up to the plate differently, you know?
And you know, Nancy Sponseller, was that sort of verboten before?
Absolutely. And to the litigators, this is shocking. This is
almost unethical.
Yes. Initially, when Collaborative first commenced in 1999 in Columbus, Central Ohio, we obtained an opinion, an ethics opinion, that what we were going to do was ethical. Because at that time, the rules of professional responsibility required an attorney to be a zealot advocate for the client. And that got translated in, you know, leave no survivors, you know, do what you have to do to win at all costs.
As much as possible.
As much as possible. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so this was difficult. And this was our training in law school. And I understand that was the background. We're all coming from that litigation background and training. So to embrace a different model entirely takes training. And because you have to change your mindset. You have to change how you communicate. But I think at the base of it all, those of us who are involved in collaborative, all the professionals, the lawyers, the financial neutrals, and the mental health, I think we care deeply and passionately about bringing resolution to people's lives in the most positive way. And this does it with the most information, the most structure. Challenge is to get the word out and get more and more people aware of the collaborative process that is available to them, if it is a better way to divorce.
Phyllis in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi there. Yes, I was interesting program. I got a divorce 50 years ago when the system was totally different, but my husband and I were in the same situation as your guest, one of the guests. We cared for each other very much. We just saw that our marriage could not continue. And we had two children also. We had been married about 15 years. And in those days, you know, it was a litigious operation and very expensive. And also one party had to be at fault, it seemed. So we had a friend who was a lawyer who agreed to take our case together. He shepherded the divorce through. And we personally split things down the middle financially. And we kept our relationship intact for our children's sake. And in fact, we remained friends until he died several years ago. And I'm just so grateful that we had a lawyer who had that vision to help us end our marriage nicely.
You know, Phyllis, thank you for that call. You bring up something, and I want to ask Janine Boland. Your children are obviously adults by the time you got your divorce, right?
No, ma'am. I came to motherhood late,
okay.
They were ages 12 to 18.
All right. So bad assumption on my part. And then I wonder whether they're adults or minors, how much was your desire driven by what Phyllis just mentioned to for the children's sake, not just financially, but emotionally?
For me, it was all about the relationship the children had with their father. That was one of the primary concerns that was driving it, was I wanted things to be structured in such a way that the children knew exactly what was going to happen afterwards, and so did Dad. Everybody needed that kind of concrete aspect to it.
Do the kids get involved at all in the process?
In my particular situation, they went to the mental health neutral, which was very helpful.
Okay.
They were able to express their anger and disappointment to Dad. They were able to express their emotions to me. They were able to describe what was going on and then given tools to assist them. But we were a very good, highly functioning family. We were in a very good place until things changed in my understanding of what I needed to be and become. And so that's it wasn't antagonistic for us at that time.
Randy Cohen, is that something you welcome in the process? Do you think the kids should be involved in that way?
Every case is different, but absolutely. I think the kids should be the focus, the primary focus of the outcome. I mean, one of the things that happens is the whole process is very transparent. There is very little back office work that's done. Ideally, the work is done at the table in these team meetings. Mm-hmm. But the kids have to be the focus. Sometimes parents forget about their kids. It sounds like, you know, in Janine's case, clearly they didn't. And that's so wonderful. But sometimes emotions are so big that they forget that these kids are also being impacted.
Do you have to bring that up, or is that part of your role?
My role.
Part of the initial questioning,
yep.
And that kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's part of the interests and goals. You know, what do you want to see happen with the kids when this is done? How do you want them to be, to feel, to all of that has to be addressed. We do a family, if the kids are underage, if they're minors, we do a parenting plan to help get everything concrete so everybody knows what's happening.
And we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you, Nancy Sponseller, when children are involved and when there's custody issues, that complicates things too. And there are other courts. I mean, there's child support enforcement agencies and that kind of thing that are involved at that point too.
Well, that's correct. If we have minor children, and we assuming that there's going to be child support paid, it's required by Ohio law to be paid through the system,
right.
And enforced. So that's no different. That's a part of the end result here.
Okay.
If it's a custody battle, I mean, if one parent is asking for sole custody of the children, it may or may not be a collaborative case.
Mm-hmm.
It may well be a collaborative case if the other parent is out of state or out of the country and really doesn't want to have a co-parent by agreement. But most people want shared parenting. Shared parenting is the norm.
Right.
Shared parenting is to be encouraged. And in this process, we work out the rights and obligations of the parties in the what can be the most successful shared parenting plan.
Well, I want to thank you, Nancy Sponseller, for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nancy Sponseller, she's a collaborative divorce attorney. Randy Cohen, mental health counselor and collaborative divorce neutral. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
And Janine Bolin recently went through a collaborative divorce. Janine, thank you for sharing your story.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks to the AllSides staff. Producer Michael DeVonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, AllSides interns Shahina Sagiri, Ryan McFadden, Sam Buck, and Matt Berkeley, with video production by Rich Karsminski and Amber Karsminski. Thanks for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.